Want to know one of my favorite sounds? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language, I guarantee it'll be one of your new favorite sounds too. Be a better you with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you have learned in the real world. I absolutely love using Babbel. Their convenient courses have helped both me and my husband learn real-life conversation skills in a different language. He's learning Swedish, of course, and I've been trying my hand at French again. It is so easy to learn how to order food, how to ask for directions, speak to merchants, and all without having to consult language apps while on vacation, or in my husband's case, living here in Sweden with me. Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off of your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/yoga. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/yoga, spelled babbel.com/yoga. Rules and restrictions may apply. Hi, and welcome to From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. Happy, happy, happy end of the week, everyone. As we know, Friday is podcast day. I hope everyone's had an amazing week. It's Wednesday evening as of this recording, and I'm getting this very strange deja vu feeling from last week's podcast recording. I am, for some reason, again, sitting in what used to be our old bedroom. So we have this beautiful bedroom at the very top of our house. And it's really tiny, and we've slept in here since we got this house 4 years ago. And then when the baby got her own room, which was downstairs, which is 3 floors down, we decided to move into what used to be our guest room so that we could be close to her, because I didn't want to have her that far away. But this room is my favorite room of the house. It's the only room that's like completely renovated and beautiful, and our bed is up here, and I miss my bed, and we're sleeping in this guest room bed that's kind of the shitty bed. Anybody else offers their guests like the shittier version of everything? But anyway, I'm sitting here again, which is really rare for me because I normally record at the office. And again, like last week, I've had some wine. And again, like last week, all 3 dogs are with me in the room, so they might bark. And again, I'm alone in the house and the baby is sleeping, so I have the monitor here. I don't know if it's just me or are these podcasts becoming more and more like completely laid back and easygoing? Am I giving less and less fucks every single week? I don't know. It's an interesting thing, this medium. The first ever episode I recorded, I was so freaked out, and I re-recorded a bunch of times, and I had this sort of script that I had like laid out with like a red thread I wanted to follow, all of that. And now we're down to literally me drinking a bunch of wine, sitting in my bed, not giving a shit if my dogs bark or my baby cries. So welcome to the very intimate part of my life. There is this part of me where I genuinely do not give a shit about what anybody else thinks. Like it's very relieving to live life that way. But then there's this whole other part of me where I'm super cautious about what I say and how I express myself and how I show up in the world. And, you know, and I'm really scared to offend anybody. It's like I have a split personality. But tonight, anyway, you're giving the absolutely giving no fucks version of Rachel. So welcome to today's podcast. I've had a really hard day, a really good day, a really busy day. I'm feeling a little depleted emotionally. I'm feeling very, so in the spirit of From the Heart, how am I doing in this moment? Speaking from the heart super candidly, I am so emotional today. Really, really emotional today. I had another astrology reading. Oh my God, every forking Every week I'm talking about astrology. Shout out to Deborah Silverman, who is like running my life right now. When I had recorded with Trevor Hall, which was a little while ago, he introduced me to the art of astrology in a way that I've just never experienced it before. And then I had a reading with his astrologer, Deborah, who's amazing. And then the next podcast episode I recorded, I kind of shared my epiphanies from that reading. And then I had Nako on the show, and he's talking about astrology. He's in the course, like doing this whole thing. And then again, today I'm talking about astrology. So the Yoga Girl podcast is just becoming, oh my God, I feel like we're more and more like one of those memes, you know, like shit yogis say. Like, I'm like the person who just casually slips into conversation, like, well, my astrologer said. But yeah, it's real. It's real. And I had a session today. And I'm kind of left a little like shook by it. I don't know. So yeah, I'm gonna rewind a little bit. Already today, this morning when I woke up, I have talked about this a lot. I sometimes feel like I'm repeating myself. And if I am, I'm sorry. But it's just when I'm working through something that I can't quite figure out, or that I'm, you know, really deep in, it's really hard for me to not come back to the same topic again and again. But I am really deep in pain and fear of something happening to my baby girl. Like, and I really thought it would be something that would pass one day. Like, it was something that just is here early on. Like, I've done, I don't know how many podcasts talking about this. Like, I've cried into the mic because of it. You know, I talk about it a lot. I vent a lot. So like, I think everybody listening, you know that I'm working through this fear. And the most of the response I get whenever I share it from other mothers is that, oh, this is completely normal. Also, it will never go away. You know, it's kind of like you have your heart living outside your body. You know, this is just what it is. Anyone out there that doesn't have kids, like, it's very hard for me to explain this feeling. So I can give an example. Ringo is right now lying next to me in bed in a ginormous pile of laundry. And Ringo used to be my only baby. And I don't know how that happened, because my first dog is Keela. She's the black, bigger dog. You guys have seen her on Instagram story, I'm sure. And then Dennis had Laika, who's white. And when we met, we got Sergeant Pepper, who was our like first, you know, first puppy together, first baby together. And for a really long time, he was really our little baby that, you know, our puppy that we raised together. And then we got Ringo, and Ringo is just small. Like, he's a really small dog. He's also very much like a person. Like, he's not dog-like at all. And Sergeant Pepper, I mean, oh, he was like our heart and soul. I miss him every day of my life. He passed away the same year we got married, a couple of months after we got married. And the pain of that passing, like, it sits with me every day. He's buried out in the backyard. I sit by his grave all the time. But Pepper was a dog, you know, like a dog that he liked to fetch and go for runs and just, you know, jumps up and down barking when you come home. And like, he was kind of a doofus and a little stupid and just a big, like clumsy, like he's just the best dog. Like, he was just, you know, a dog. But Ringo, we got Ringo as a baby, as a puppy, and he's really small. So he travels with us everywhere. So when we started traveling the world, someone would move into our house to take care of the other dogs and to take care of the house, but Ringo would always come along. I mean, he still does. He comes everywhere. And Ringo is not a dog. Like, Ringo is a person dog, which is very strange. Like, he's extremely picky about people. Like, he's very, very human-like. Like, he doesn't step in puddles. He likes to sleep under the covers, like kind of wrapped around me. Like, he has this very weird personality where you can just kind of look into his eyes and you know that he thinks that he's above us a little bit. Like, he kind of judges me like he's the higher species. He doesn't fetch, you know, you can't go for a run with him. Like, he just doesn't act like a dog. He's more like a little person. So Ringo, because we traveled with him so much, I became so attached to Ringo, incredibly attached to him. Also because we got him really close to my best friend passing away. So he was just a puppy then. He was little, and my best friend passed away, and I kind of attached myself to Ringo like a little buoy, you know, like I was in this rough ocean. I didn't know if I was going to make it, if I was going to sink or swim. And Ringo became, well, he became my reason to like get out of bed in the morning because he needed a walk. You know, he became like, you know, like, of course, you know, Dennis is like, you know, above and beyond everything. That is, if you're listening, sorry, didn't mean to make you sound like Ringo is more important than you. But somehow, like, caring for Ringo, taking care of him as if he was my baby, it gave me a purpose, right? So me as his mom. And the fear I've had, like already with Ringo, of something happening to him, it's totally abnormal, like very, very abnormal. Like I was always totally hysterical about him being on a leash, like 100% of the time. I was so scared of him running away. I was kind of treating him like, you know, like he was really dumb, which he's not. Like he's a smart dog. Like if he would be in the street for whatever reason, there's a car, like he would know not to step in front of the car. Like, he's not an idiot. But I would, you know. And Dennis loves to just let Ringo run and like have the spurt of release of energy because he's an Italian greyhound. So, you know, he runs like a cheetah. It's an amazing thing to see. He's so fast. And Dennis loves to do that when we're alone or far away on the North Shore or somewhere where we're completely closed off from everybody else. We're in a dog park or whatever. And I would just have like my heart in the back of my throat freaking out if he would let Ringo off a leash for like a second, because I had this thought that he might just like bolt, like he might just take off and leave me or get run over by a car or disappear and not come back. And I don't know. And it was actually a source of a lot of discussion and fights between me and Dennis, because Dennis just thought like, you know, I have so much tension around how we take care of Ringo because I'm so scared something's going to happen to him. And never let anybody else watch him ever, ever, ever. Like always with me, always by my side. You know, I was kind of like put my claws into him. Like that was it. And there was this big fear there, really, of him dying, like of something happening to him. And then I had the baby and everybody told me, oh my God, it's going to be so different with this baby. And I said, well, I already have a baby. His name is Ringo. I literally could not imagining loving another being more than I love Ringo. Like loving Ringo for me is just like the epitome of love. Like I just couldn't understand loving another being more than I love this baby, like my baby Ringo. And then I even had a friend who was like, oh my God, you're going to want to like get rid of Ringo when you have a baby. And I just, oh my God, I still think that's the most insane thing I've ever heard. But a lot of people told me like, oh, you're going to have a different relationship after this because your baby just takes, you know, front and center. Your baby becomes where all of your attention goes. It's really hard to focus on anything else, even like your partner, your soulmate, your husband. There is those first few months where automatically they kind of slide into number two spot because you're so absorbed with nursing, feeding, and keeping this tiny little human being alive. And then ideally, you know, you come back to that place where, of course, like your husband and wife and soulmates, and you know, you should have your husband at the top and maybe number two. Like that's something that I've totally learned. Or I maybe like we're in this triangle and it rolls around, so we all take turns, or so we're very equal there at the top. But the first thing that happened when I had the baby, the first moment I saw Ringo after I birthed the baby, and you know, this was a 24-hour birth, 42-week pregnancy, like I was very, okay, I'm saying it like I was more pregnant than other women who were pregnant, like clearly that's not the case, but there was something about the end of that pregnancy that was just, oh my God. And then I had the baby, my whole life turned upside down, I'm looking at this tiny being. And it hadn't even hit me really yet. Like, oh, I'm a mom. You know, it's just had this newborn baby, a couple hours old. And then Ringo walks into the room. And I swear to God, okay, I kid you not, he looked like a wolf. Like an actual, like a wolf. Like, he looked so dog-like. He looked so dog-like. It was like his face was a wolf. Like, I don't know. I can't explain it any other way. Like he had these huge fangs and huge teeth, and like his hair was just standing up from his back. Like he was an animal all of a sudden. He became an animal. And I was just, you know, my jaw dropped and I turned to Dennis. I was like, Dennis, Ringo is a dog. And he looked at me like I was insane, you know, like delirious from birth and whatnot. He was like, Yes, honey. Yes. Ringo is a dog. And I was like, no. Like, Ringo is a dog. Like, he's not a baby. And he couldn't quite understand what I was saying. But for all the years that I've had Ringo, I haven't seen him as a dog. I've seen him as a baby. And then I had an actual human baby. And I realized, oh my God, Ringo is a dog. Right? Such an insane realization to have. But yeah, that's what happened. And what everybody said, I don't quite agree. Like my love for Ringo is no way less. Like I love Ringo exactly the same as I loved him before. It's just the love that I feel for Lea Luna. It's like, it's in another part of my body. Like it's just, it's another type of love. Like it's, I don't know. I don't know how to compare the two. It's like apples and oranges. But I don't think it's like you have this finite, is that a word? like a limited, I guess is the word I'm looking for. Like you have a limited amount of love that you can give. And if you love someone and then you start loving someone else, like you have to love them less. Like I don't, that's not how love works. Like we have infinite amounts of love that we hold in our hearts that we can pour onto other people and animals and the earth. And yeah, it's just a different type of love. But something that did change immediately was that this overwhelming fear I had of something happening to Ringo moved over and landed in the baby instead. So, you know, Dennis would start walking kind of Ringo off a leash from time to time, or let him out in the garden, or, you know, someone else would come watch him. And I just, that panicky feeling that I had when Ringo was off leash or outside or whatever, it's not there anymore, because all of the panic that I felt, all the fear of losing him, was transferred into the baby and became this absolutely paralyzing fear of losing the baby. So in a way, I feel, I don't know, I felt relief, like, oh my God, I can love Ringo the same, but I don't have to freak out that he's going to die. Like, why would I think that Ringo's going to die? Like, Ringo's a, you know, he's safe, he's fine, he's here. But now I have this, yeah, this totally paralyzing fear of something happening to my baby instead. And yes, I've talked about it a lot, but I'm beginning to realize that the level of panic that I feel, the level of, I guess, the level of fear in a way that it actually inhibits me in my day-to-day life, it's not normal. I'm coming to terms with this now. Like it's not normal. I think, yes, it's normal for every mother to be super fearful that something's going to happen to their baby. And, you know, like I agree with that term, like having your heart live outside your body. But for me, and I don't know if it is because I've had a lot of loss, probably it's because I've had a lot of loss. It consumes me. Like it actually consumes me. I often choose to not leave the house because I'm worried about the baby. I always choose to not have a babysitter because I'm worried about leaving the baby with anybody else. I turn Dennis down for date night all the time. I choose to not go to yoga in the evening. Like I actually set my life up in a way, not just because I want to, you know, be with the baby and be at home, but also in the night when she's sleeping, where we could be to go to dinner, get a babysitter. Like I am just so scared something's going to happen to her. So I actually kind of plan my life around me being present, even though it's not really helping that I'm hovering over her, trying to make sure she's breathing all the time. And every time I put her down for a nap and then I check the monitor and she's sleeping, I have that thought in the back of my mind, like, oh, I wonder if this is the time that she's not going to wake up. And I'm starting to realize, like, this is not normal. Like, what I have, I think, is a very extreme form of this fear. And maybe there's other women that feel the same, or dads and everyone, people that have had loss and are kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. But yeah, it's definitely something that I can't imagine living with this pain and living with this fear. So for instance, you know, whenever I articulate this fear, and right now I'm cool. I'm cool talking about this right now. Like I am okay talking about this right now because I spent a big chunk of today crying. So I've had a big emotional release and I feel better. You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl. There's nothing quite like curling up in your own bed after a long day of juggling family life and business goals. Make that experience even more rewarding with the coziest bedding imaginable, bedding from Parachute. Parachute has brought comfort to my life in more ways than one. New moms know that sleep often evades us, but with Parachute, the quality of my sleep is maximized, even if the quantity of sleep is not. The softest sheets and pillows help me instantly fall into a deeper and carefree slumber. And I sleep even better knowing I've made a conscious choice. Workers at Parachute are paid a fair wage and returns are donated to Habitat for Humanity. Mornings with my family are made especially cuddly with Parachute too. The sheets are perfect for playing peekaboo in with my baby girl while Dennis cuddles with Ringo. And when I wake up rested, it shows up in all aspects of my life. I feel better, I get more work done, and my yoga practice is more centered. We spend a third of our lives in bed, so make sure you're spending it right. Visit parachutehome.com/yogagirl for free shipping and returns on Parachute's very comfortable bedding and bath linens. They offer a 60-night trial, so if you don't love it, just send it right back. That's parachutehome.com/yogagirl for free shipping and returns on Parachute's amazingly comfortable bedding and linens. parachutehome.com/yogagirl. Mothers deserve the absolute best. So this Mother's Day, spoil the moms in your life with little luxuries from Osea. Osea's skin and body care is the perfect way to remind all the moms, mother figures, caregivers, grandmothers, and mother-in-laws in your life to make time for themselves. If you have been looking for the perfect gift, I recommend Osea's Andaria Algae Body Oil. I've been using it for years, and it seems like every single time I apply it, I get compliments on my skin. This body oil is rich, but it's never greasy, and it's clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity. Your skin will feel more sculpted and toned, and you'll be left feeling silky, soft, and glowing. Another favorite of mine is the Andaria Collagen Body Lotion. Ever since I've been using collagen, I have noticed a difference in my skin. In fact, it's never been better. Using Osea's body oil and lotion together is a mega moisture duo, giving you a full body glow. Osea's products are infused with their signature Andaria seaweed, but it's also clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified. Really just a perfect gift for yourself, the moms in your life, and even the planet. Spoil the moms in your life with clean, vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code YOGA at oseamalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to oseamalibu.com and use the code YOGA for 10% off. And like on cue, Ringo is now trying to burrow himself deeper under this pile of laundry. Oh my god. Yeah, there he is. Hi, buddy. So for instance, when I share this with anyone, like today I had this astrology reading with Deborah, and we're talking about just kind of, I don't know, what I think is important things. Like we're talking about career stuff and work stuff and relationship stuff and me and Dennis, and I don't know, just going through some yeah, big picture important things. And then I get this feeling in the back of my throat every time she mentions the baby for any reason. And she's talking about beautiful things, how, you know, the relationship that I have with her, it's really what's meant to shape me for the rest of my life. Like she's here to teach me unconditional love. Like she's here to teach me to slow down and be soft and be feminine and be, you know, really, really present and really still. And every time she mentions her, I feel the back of my throat like kind of tightening up, you know, when you have to kind of really intensely cry, but you want to swallow it because I don't love crying in front of people. And, you know, being vulnerable is a really hard thing for me. I have to work at that really hard every day, especially face to face with someone. And then all of a sudden she's like, are you okay? Like, is there something here? And I'm like, you know, and I just mentioned the words because we're talking about motherhood. And I said, well, like the hardest part about motherhood for me is this overwhelming, you know, fear that something, and I couldn't even finish my sentence. I couldn't even finish a sentence and say that something's going to happen to her. And I just start bawling. Like I just can't not cry. And I can actually in the moment sense, I mean, I can feel it right now. I can sense it's like a rock at the pit of my soul. Like it's like this ginormous dark cloud, and it hangs over everything I do, absolutely everything. So it's not this little light fear of like, you know, saying bye to her because I'm going to work and, you know, hoping she's safe. Like it's heavy as fuck, and it's messing with my whole life. And then everything I do, everywhere I go, whatever I'm talking about, like it's there, you know, and it's morbid and it's messed up. And it's something that I really decided to work on and kind of move a little bit deeper into. So once I accepted the fact that, okay, maybe this is not normal. Maybe it's not just every mom feels like this. Like I think this is something that's anchored a little bit deeper into my own history, my own story, my own past, right? So for the rest of the reading today, I really got to go into parts of my past and stories from my past when I've experienced really overwhelming loss, right? And how somehow in my life, overwhelming love and attachment is immediately connected to loss and death. So whenever I have something that's just so precious and so, you know, cherished, it automatically comes attached with this knowing that I'm not going to get to keep it. So it's not that I'm fearful for, you know, what if one day something would happen to Lea Luna? It's like there's a part of my being that's just convinced that she's going to die. And those are two really different things. Like being convinced that one day your baby's gonna die, like that shit's fucked up and it's not real, right? It's not real. And Yeah. Okay. I'm crying now, if you can't tell. But today, what something that Deborah said, she's like, well, this is so messed up, specifically for the very, you know, first reason that one, you know, I see in your chart here that, you know, you have this amazing bond and you're meant to live this whole lifetime together because she's your teacher for the rest of your life. And number two, she's completely safe, like completely safe and nourished and held. And like, you know, you have built this beautiful family and you're in this space where you're taking amazing care of her. She's so safe. There's no reason to walk around with this rock, you know, weighing you down, waiting for the other shoe to drop, because maybe all the shoes dropped already, you know? And when I think about that, like I had to really, and it's interesting that for me, death right now is a really, it's really present. My thoughts on death, thoughts about death, worries about death, in this moment of my life, that's just so full of life. It's so full of life. I've never felt more alive in my whole life. I've never felt more joyful. I've never felt more like I'm in the right place than I have since I became a mom. And it's not just being a mom to her, but in my relationship with Dennis and work-wise and, you know, making a difference in the world-wise. Like I feel in so many ways, I'm so anchored in so much life and so much purpose. And then there's this overwhelming kind of dark cloud of death that's chasing me. And I realized today that it's not real. And that's a relief. I mean, it's not real. Like the fear is real, but it's not, this is not something that's playing out in my life right now at all. Like I have no reason in this moment in time, if I can be super present with where I am, everything is okay. Like I'm completely cared for. I'm completely held. My baby's safe. My husband's safe. I'm safe. We're all safe. All is well. Like I can repeat that mantra again and again. All is well, all is well, all is well. So this fear that I have, you know, it's from something that's surfacing from my past and this idea that I have that's stuck in the core of my being about this is how life plays out or this is how life has to be. Someone in the end, if you have overwhelming happiness, someone in the end has to die. And that's a really, really horrible, horrible way to live your life. So what I've talked about today a lot, and I guess also why this is a theme right now, is that I'm writing a book. Okay, I'm going to laugh now because this is, I'm laughing now because this is really silly. I'm writing a book about death and haven't quite connected the dots as to why am I, you know, spending so much time thinking about death. Why is death resurfacing again and again in the back of my mind and playing out in my relationships? Yeah, probably because I'm also playing an active part in making these things surface. But yeah, I'm writing a book and I have a book already out since a couple of years. It's called Yoga Girl. And it was a really easy book for me to write, even though I wrote it during one of the most challenging years of my entire life. So I wrote that book, end of 2013 and first half of 2014. So when my best friend died, when I went through a lot of loss in my life, but I wasn't ready to process any of that yet. So I just stuck with the script and I wrote what I intended to write from before. So Yoga Girl is, it's just little stories from my past and my life and epiphanies and realizations I've had about life paired with really good yoga sequencing and good recipes. And just, it's a really inspirational, colorful, happy, poppy kind of book. And it was really actually pretty easy to write. And now I'm writing number two, which has been a long time coming, book number two. And this is not at all what the last one was. So it's not going to be this super, you know, poppy, colorful, easy to put together book. But it's a book about loss. It's a book about resilience. It's a book about overcoming. It's a book about death. And I'm writing about this exact year. So when my best friend passed away, if you're new to following my journey or if you're new to this community and to 2014, oh fuck, this is as hard to say every time. Every time I say it, it's like I'm talking about someone else's life or like I'm describing a movie or something that didn't happen to me. But I was flying to Bonaire from Aruba together with Dennis and Ringo, and just walking from the check-in counter, I had a stabbing, like overwhelming stabbing pain in my stomach, and I collapsed to the floor. And paramedics came and they couldn't find anything wrong with me. And we had to fly to Bonaire for this retreat. So we carried on and I was vomiting and, you know, I was in so much pain. Dennis had to carry me through the airport. And when we finally got there, I mean, it was like 9 hours of excruciating pain. Way worse than giving birth, by the way. Literally. Oh my God. So much worse than giving birth. And then when we got to the hospital, finally the pain went away. And in the same time that this happened, my best friend had been at the hospital as well, but in another country. And she crashed her car into a truck on the other side of the freeway. No one really knows how exactly it happened. But yeah, the same time that I spent with this excruciating pain, you know, trying to survive, like she was trying to live. So we had surgery in the same part of the body. And yeah, the moment my pain went away was the moment that she died. And that's real. Like it's insane. But yeah, that's real. And that's what happened. And then, yeah, she was supposed to be my bridesmaid at our wedding. We had our wedding just 3 months after. And of course, yeah, it was a really, really hard time because it was also paired with so much love and so much joy and friendship and family. But it was also the hardest time of our entire lives. I mean, of Dennis's too. So, and then right after that, a month after our wedding, my grandmother passed away. And then 3 weeks after that, Sergeant Pepper died. Our dog died. And then 4 months after that, my mom tried to commit suicide for the third time. Like, this is kind of like, I'm making this up, except I'm sad to say I'm not. And I can talk about it now. Like, I definitely can. I've gone through a lot of healing and a lot of work to get to a place where I can just articulate that these things happened to me, or that these are things that just came my way. And I've had this book about this story, you know, about this journey, because it led me all the way until now. Like, it's not over. You know, it's something that's, I feel like a chapter definitely closed when Lea Luna was born. Like, that's, I look at that as two phases of my life, sort of, then and now. And I've been writing this book, but I've been writing it in my mind since it happened. And it's not until this year, I mean, okay, end of last year, that I was actually able to put this stuff down on paper. You know, what actually happened, how it happened, and tell the story and share that pain. And it's been so fucking hard, you guys. It's been so hard. Writing actually is easy once I'm sitting down and I'm writing, but every time I open my computer and I know I'm going to sit down to write, it's like I have this massive wound, like right at the center of my heart. And over the wound, you know, I've like sewn it shut and it has a big scab over it, and then like band-aids and lots of bandages. And every time I open the computer to write, it's like I have to rip all that shit open again, you know, and it's a really hard process to go through. It's a really hard thing to do. But then I write, and every time I write, I cry, and I write and I cry and I write and I cry. And then all of a sudden, you know, like Dennis calls and, you know, let's go do something, or you know, the baby's awake, or I have a meeting, or, you know, like life happens. And I just like close the computer and I carry on with my day. And to be able to do that, I have to piece everything back together again. You know, I can't walk with this open wound in my heart open and still function to do everything I have to do throughout the day. And I'm starting to figure out that this, I think, is the process of healing. Like really, like healing trauma, healing deep emotional pain. Because when it happens in the moment, we have to shut down. Like we have to close off. Sometimes there's no other way to survive what's coming. We have to close down. There's just no other way. It's too much to process. The body helps us. You know, we just shut off for a while. And then we can choose to stay disconnected and to stay shut down and to stay, you know, to not feel forever. You know, it's actually, I'm going to say, like, it's easier to go through life and not feel. At least we trick ourselves into believing that. In the beginning, I think it is. Because just the idea of going back into that pain, like, it's too much to bear. So we live our lives and we continue. But then there's that gaping kind of big wound that we've, you know, we put bandages on it, but it's not healed and it's there. So for the rest of our lives, for as long as we live, anytime anything rubs against that wound, we're going to be triggered and we're going to have a really fucking hard time. Whatever it is, if it's fear of loss, fear of death, if it's relationship stuff, you know, if you've been hurt in a relationship in the past and you didn't heal it, whenever you have a new relationship, and it might be beautiful, but it might just touch upon something that happened that triggered that triggers that wound from before, and you might want to just run the other direction and just kind of end that relationship immediately and start over somewhere else. You know, there's millions of ways that this manifests for us, but I find that the process of healing has to require going back to the place, to the place of entry, right? It has to be returning to the actual wound, which means picking at those scabs and tearing off the bandages and looking inside. And it hurts. It fucking hurts. It hurts like hell. But that's the process. And maybe we can only do a little bit at a time. I don't think it's, I mean, maybe for some people, you know, we can have like an overwhelming, huge epiphany or a healing moment or a healing experience, definitely. But I think for most of us, especially since, you know, shit's going to happen and come our way, and then we think we're done with it, and then just life keeps throwing new things at you all the time. It's also just called life. But yeah, healing it, at least for me where I'm now, it means going back to the wound and just scratching at it a little bit, like peeking inside, getting something down on paper, like breathing into something, remembering something, feeling something, just sitting with the pain of that moment, with that remembrance. And then I walk away. And then I'm like, okay, you know, that was it. That was what I could handle today. And I don't think I could have gone through this process then. Like at the time, you know, it was too much, too overwhelming, too much, too quick, too big. You know, she was my best friend. Like her and Olivia, like they were it. So, you know, to have, and you know, I had four girls to stand by my side, you know, when we got married, four girls and a guy. And then those four were just down to three, you know, and that's what I had. So it was just, it's still too big to absorb that's real, like that she actually died. And I can't, like, sometimes I think about that now. I mean, okay, I think about death a lot, but like, yeah, if something similar would happen to any of my, you know, best friends now, it's just absolutely unimaginable. Like I cannot even put that thought in my brain at all. Like I just can't. I'm like, that's ridiculous. Like that could never happen. But I also know that, yeah, that stuff happens. It happened to me. It happened to Andrea. Like she died, and it can happen to anyone at any time.
You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl.
Did you know that the average family visits 5 totally different websites before booking their vacation rental? But travel planning should not be another tedious and time-consuming chore on your to-do list. Don't waste time planning your next trip when you can just use Tripping.com, the world's number one site for vacation rentals. Whether you're looking for a cabin or a beachfront home to get away this winter, or already looking ahead to vacations this springtime like me, Tripping.com can help you find the perfect place to stay. Vacation rentals offer flexibility, perks, and amenities that hotels don't, like multiple bedrooms, backyards, hot tubs, free Wi-Fi, and even fully stocked kitchens so you can plan and cook your own meals, something that's so important to me when booking my home away from home. My little family is always on the move, and I can trust that Tripping.com will find us cozy places to stay quick and easy. Spend less time planning and more time relaxing in the present moment with Tripping.com, trusted by millions of travelers and featured by New York Times, Travel and Leisure, Forbes, and many more. With Tripping.com, one search lets you filter, compare, and sort over 10 million available properties on trusted sites like Vrbo, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, and more. And you can stop wondering if you're getting the best deal. You'll save an average of 18% per night by booking your vacation with Tripping.com. So don't forget, if you want to save time and money while booking the perfect vacation rental for your next trip, head to Tripping.com/yogagirl today. That's TRIPPING.com/yogagirl. Tripping.com/yogagirl. Oh, have you watched The Good Place? That's why I say what the fork. If you haven't watched The Good Place on Netflix with Kristen Bell, it's the best show ever. I love it so much. But they can't curse in the show. So they say fork instead of fuck. So it's the best show ever. And in that show, there's a moment when one of the angels / demons in the show, he gets to experience a little bit of what it's like to be human, in that knowing that one day we're all going to die. Just existentially knowing that this all ends. And he's just consumed with this overwhelming, like all-consuming panic and despair, and he turns to the humans and he's like, how do you live? And she answers, she's like, well, this is what it's like to be human. We're just a little bit sad all the time because we know one day we're all gonna die, but we live with it, you know. And I actually genuinely believe, like, yeah, that's absolutely true. And once you've had loss,
that fear or that knowing, it becomes at the front of your mind, versus if you haven't been through a lot of loss, it's in the way back of your head. Like the idea of death is just this abstract concept. Like, you know, one day we're all going to die, but what does that really mean? It doesn't really mean anything. You know, you're not thinking about death every day or every moment of the day. But once you've had loss, that thought is right there in front all the time, because you know, hey, like this happens. Like someone I love died unexpectedly, maybe, or maybe expectedly or whatever. Like all loss is awful and really hard to come to terms with as well. So we start waiting for the other shoe to drop. We start looking around and wondering, when is this going to happen again? And yeah, for some of us, it happens again. Like I had Andrea die, my grandmother died, Pepper died, and then my mom wanted to die. You know, it was just, I think, a little too much to take in just that short amount of time. So I think now I've taken all of my fear of death, all of this loss, all of my loved ones that have died, have passed away, and the fear, of course, that I've lived with my entire life of my mom dying. Like that's another podcast. But I've taken all of that pain, all of that fear, and I've put it into this tiny little human being. And it's, I mean, she's 11 months old. She's like a little suicidal, like insane person too. Like she puts everything in her mouth, everything, everything, like the craziest stuff, everything goes in her mouth. She throws herself off the bed. If she could, like down the stairs, into the pool, like she would jump out of the car, moving car. Like she has no grasp of danger or pain or fear of obstacles or anything at all. You know, she puts her hands everywhere, puts everything in her mouth. And just there's 1 million times of the day when I'm just like, I feel like I'm saving her life in some shape or form. So living with a paralyzing fear of death, it doesn't really fit with having an 11-month-old. You know, it doesn't really work. I just think of all the energy that's spent from my end every day worrying about this stuff and imagining these morbid things in my mind. Like, what if I could just have a normal sense of fear, like a sensible sense, meaning, yeah, okay, if she goes and plays with a friend, or she, you know, is going to ride a bike for the first time, or I go to work and I'm not with her, whatever, like normal basic things, right? You know, just like worry like a normal parent, but where it doesn't actually ruin my life. Like I kind of think that would be nice. And also I kind of think that I would be a way cooler mom. Like how cool would I be? Come on. I mean, okay, Dennis, are you listening? How cool would I be if I was like the awesome mom that I am, but if I was also chill? Like being a chill mom, that's the dream. Part of this was I was sitting with a friend the other day, and she's older than me. She has grown kids. And I was just casually mentioning, because I was, you know, trying to carry on a conversation, but the baby was walking around. So actually I'm not listening to anything she says, because my eyes are just laser focused on what the baby's doing and whatever way she's going to try to injure herself today. And I said, you know, and she says, so how is motherhood? Is everything going well? And I said, yes, that's kind of my answer all the time. Yes, it's beautiful. It's the most amazing thing I've ever done. But how long does this fear last? And when I asked her, she said, what do you mean? What fear? I said, well, like this very paralyzing fear that she's going to die. And she looked at me like I was a little weird. She was like, I never felt that way. And I was like, what? Like, oh my God, what a relief. Like a mom that says that she doesn't feel that way. What do you mean? She says, well, I mean, of course, like I worry about my kids all the time, but I never had this, like, I never felt like it was impeding my life in some way. You know, I always felt a lot of trust. Like, of course, these babies were brought my way for me to keep them. You know, we're a family. Like, I'm going to grow old with them. And that thought, just the knowing of like, she just knows she's going to grow old with her kids. I never felt that, you know, I never felt that. I never had that trust. So big part of this also is, if you trust in life and if you fully trust and you have faith in the universe and or God or spirit or infinite love or, you know, like Jesus or Buddha or Allah or whoever you pray to, you know, if you really have that trust and that faith, of course you're going to be more settled and more calm. You're not going to wait for your child to die if you at the same time fully trust that the universe has your back. So a big part of this for me, I guess, is that I don't actually have that trust. I guess I always think that I do, but I'm realizing now I don't. If I did, then I would trust that the universe takes me beautiful places. And of course, universe would not take my child away. Like, you know, there's no, these two things just don't go together. but that's the thought that I'm living with every day. So there is this lack of trust that I need to deal with. And another thing the astrologer asked me today, she was like, well, what about faith? Like, how do you pray? And my thing with prayer is I pray when shit hits the fan. I pray in moments of doubt, in moments of crises, in moments of pain, of loss, of death. Like when I'm thrown to my knees by fucking pain and despair. Yeah, then I pray. I don't have a normal relationship to God, to spirit. That just exists in my day-to-day life. Like when I'm happy, when things are good, I'm not there. Like I practice yoga every day. I connect with my body. I take deep breaths. I have a mindfulness practice, you know, but that's a very different thing. Like I don't talk to God unless I need him to save me. And I mean, oh, fuck, man. This day has been really filled with pain and realization and epiphany. And I have two things I have to do like now. And I kind of like being able to put things on an agenda, even abstract things like healing. But there's definitely things I need to come to terms with in terms of this loss, like with my mom. And you know, her depression and her suicide attempts, it's something that we don't talk about a lot. Like it's a very painful thing. Of course, it's always there. You know, it was recent that this happened. It was 2-3 years ago. It's 3 years ago already. Damn. Yeah. 2-3 years ago. So it's always there. I'm always worried about her all the time. You know, like I never really know. And she's so happy now. And she's had the past 2 years like really solid and really strong foundation. I feel like she has her feet on the ground. She's an AA, which has changed her tremendously. Like also with the birth of the baby, I think grandmotherhood really shifted something for her. So, you know, but I'm never going to trust her to be there. Never. And that's also not a super fun way to live either. But no, you know, when someone asks me, like someone from the outside who knows our history, and they're like, so how is your mom? And my answer is always like, well, like right now she's really good. Like I actually think right now she's really good. But there's always that right now, because I don't know what's going to happen next week. I don't know if she has another trauma or loss or something hard come her way. Like there's no one who will ever know how she'll react to that. So I have to kind of live with that uncertainty probably for the rest of my life, that I don't know if my mom's going to be here forever. You know, and not just by, course of life or accidents or someone, you know, driving their car into a truck on the other side of the road. But yeah, maybe one day she won't want to live. And that's a really different pain, you know, actually. And it's a difficult pain for me to, I don't know. And I've been through this a lot, talking to people that have been suicidal and depressed. And it can look really selfish from the outside, you know. Like that was my first reaction. Like if you want to kill yourself, you want to leave all your loved ones, your family, your kids, you want to leave them behind. Like that's the most fucking selfish thing I've ever heard of. Like Jesus. But realizing now that someone who's severely depressed and doesn't want to live, like they actually most likely think that it's going to be a relief for the people they leave behind. Like they're just a burden, you know? So my view on this has changed a lot, but it's still something that that we don't talk about a lot. And I'm starting to be able to see how, for me, this fear, this not being able to settle in, okay, well, if love is here, it's here to stay. I kind of have it in the back of my, it's in, like in my backbone, that no, if it's really precious, if it's really special, like a mother-daughter relationship, it's not going to stay. And it's just not true. And that's something I think I'm going to have to bang myself over the head with. Like, it's just not true. It's not true. It's not true. It's not true. It was true at one point in my past. But right now, like, look at the reality of my life right now. Like, my reality is, well, my mom's fine. Like, my mom's happy. My mom's thriving. Like, she's over there in Stockholm, like, having tons of fun. Like, we work together now. Every morning, I wake up with the baby. And when I feed the baby oatmeal in the morning, I could call my mom. We have a great relationship. Like, we talk every day. She's fine. She's good. And the baby's safe. Super safe. Like, are you kidding? Like, super safe. She has a hypersensitive, paranoid mom that watches her every move. Like, baby's safe. And also from a universal standpoint, like, we're all held and safe. And Dennis is safe and I'm safe. And, you know, so these things, they're actually not playing out in present in my reality. It's not true. But there's this part of us that when something happens to us, especially in our childhood, like, it becomes ingrained into how we look at life, you know, what we expect life to give us.
And it also shapes us in how we look at the world. And I've just been shaped in kind of a fucked up way. And I think this is that, yeah, life is really wanting me to look at this and push me to heal these things.
You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl.
Are you hiring? As a business owner, I speak from experience when I say that every business needs great people and a better way to find them. We need something better than posting a job online and just praying that the right person might see it. ZipRecruiter knows there is a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidate for you. Don't spend any more time sorting through emails of applicants that aren't the right fit. Business owners definitely do not have time for that. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and then invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Find applicants in any city or industry nationwide. The right candidate is out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. That's ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. ZipRecruiter.com/yoga. So part of me is wondering if by the time I finish writing this book, like, where am I going to be? That's also a really interesting thought, because for every chapter that I write, like, there's a little softening of that wound. You know, there's a little healing taking place. And I also think that healing is a lifelong process. Like, if you've experienced major trauma, you're never going to be what you were before. No, that's just not what it is. But you get to live the rest of your life with your heart on your sleeve. You know, you get to live the rest of your life knowing that the rest of your life might not be infinite. You know, it might not be forever. And through that knowing, hopefully, you know, you'll cherish the days that you have even more. And you'll learn to love even harder and to really, really love and cherish the people that you have in your life and spend every day with intention and purpose and anchoring into that pain and then using that pain to do something, right? To change the world somehow, and to not let that loss just grow into this big scab or this big weight that you carry for the rest of your life. But yeah, bringing that wound to surface. So yeah, out of the two things I have to do, one is continue this process of healing and continue talking about, writing about, sharing these things, and not let too much time pass in between each time, because I think eventually if I go there enough, like, it's actually going to settle. Like, I really have that feeling too, which is pretty, pretty remarkable. And then the second thing I have to do is I need to reevaluate my relationship with God. Like, I know the word God. I have my guard up for God. The word God doesn't sit well with everyone, especially anyone, you know, any Swedish people listening. Like, I'm Swedish. Sweden is the least religious country in the world, which is pretty crazy. So you know, I'm not raised that way at all. There's no relationship to church or Christianity or anything like that. You know, I wasn't raised believing in something greater than us at all. And actually what's brought me there again and again is this pain, is this loss. So I have this relationship with God, but if I'm only there when life kind of throws me down on the floor, it means that I miss out on that day-to-day trust and joy of feeling connected. You know, if it requires something horrible to happen for me to feel truly connected to spirit, you know, that's no fun way to live. You know, I want to be able to feel that connection all the time, every day of my life. And yeah, and I see glimpses of it all the time with the baby. You know, her birth was a major thing. Her first weeks of life was just, whoa, you know, like, God lives in her, like, 100%. And I can feel her there. Like, I can feel it all in that moment. But then it's overclouded by that fear of death and by that pain. And then, you know, the doubt that I have and the fact that I don't trust. So I'm guessing that this is just a lifelong practice. I can't believe I spent a whole podcast talking about death. But, you know, if anybody listening out there, if you're going through struggle, and it doesn't have to be actual death or loss, although I know a lot of you listening are or have been through this. That's the thing about, you know, being human. We can't avoid it at all. We really just can't. And hopefully we won't have, you know, the shoe drop again and again and again. But I'm thinking for me that this story actually, you know, maybe begins with death and it ends with birth. That's how I'm feeling right now in this moment. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you for trusting in me, listening to me share my experience, because it's not an easy thing. Definitely not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to talk about. It's not an easy thing to get into. And something for me is it's easy to write. Like, I share this a lot. You'll see posts from me on Instagram. And like, I wrote a post today about this fear of losing Lea Luna and what that does to me. And reading that, like, I'm crying like a baby. Like, I can't stop crying. And I'm reading my own words and it's making me cry. And then I read the post again, like an hour later, and I cry again. So from afar, you know, but I'm still very distant with that. Like, I'm not sitting with another person in front of me. If I'm actually in that intimate moment, it's really hard for me to be vulnerable. So maybe the podcast is just one more step closer, to touching that genuine vulnerability, to just really being able to sit with my pain and also show it to the world, you know, because if we're all disconnected and we're all one walking this earth, I mean, your pain is my pain. My pain is yours. And I love you. I'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. You can find all of these on rachelbraithen.com, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or anywhere you normally get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review while you are there. Thanks to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work. And of course, thanks to my sponsors, ZipRecruiter, Parachute, and Tripping.com. Please support them the way they support this podcast. I'll see you next week.